The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerkers Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Welcome to this edition of the Constitution Hour, featuring Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, at veritasradionetwork.com. Remember, if you've missed any of the previous episodes of the Constitution Hour, you can always download them as part of your Founders Pass membership. And even if you're not a member, you can always listen to the very long, extended, full segment long previews of each individual episode of the Constitution Hour and all the other shows on the Crusade Channel. You can also write the doctor if you have a question that you'd like answered. Please go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com and use the contact form to send your note, or you can find Kevin on the Twitter, at Kevin Gutzman, or on the Facebook, Kevin Gutzman. We'll now go to the Skype Maker Hotline and bring the good doctor in, and begin this week's episode of the Constitution Hour, which finds us just a little bit closer to finality when it comes to who it is that is going to be on the ballot for the presidency in, I assume, Kevin, although we're not guaranteed, all 50 states. Good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. So now that the Libertarians have concluded their dirty work for the quadrennial cycle, which is to choose a nominee, I guess we could start from the beginning and kind of run down the candidates that were vying for the Libertarian Party nomination, and then the ultimate choice of Gary Johnson. And you and I both know Governor Johnson. You may know him more well than I do, but I've interviewed him about a half a dozen times. So why don't we go back to the start here? The convention was held this past weekend. Our mutual friend Tom Woods gave, I think, the keynote address, or one of the major addresses there. What stands out about this quadrennial cycle for the Libertarian Party nomination that separates it from previous ones?
Well, there are two things that became clear. One was that the delegates wanted to choose somebody they thought might be politically viable, and so obviously the two-term governors they lit upon were proven vote-getters. And the other thing is that Tom Woods is the best spokesman for libertarianism in the United States. He's the clearest formulator of libertarian understanding of the proper role of government, and he's the one fellow who can, on his feet, answer the arguments that are made either from the left or from the right against it. So libertarianism, it seems to me, if it's going to be reflected in the Libertarian Party, if it is essentially consistent adherence to the non-aggression principle, it's not reflected in the Libertarian Party's nomination of these two former Republican governors. And I don't think Tom is really somebody with political aspirations, so maybe people who are devoted to the Libertarian Party because they are principled followers of classical anarchists, maybe they're just going to have to be satisfied with hearing Tom give the keynote speech as some former Republican governors nominated for national office.
Well, you know, that really is a great departure from the idea of libertarianism as it is organized in the Libertarian Party. Because previously, and I'm not breaking any news here, there's no flash on the bottom of the screen that's going to go off. Newsflash, newsflash, you're about to be informed. Because everyone knows this. The Libertarian candidate was probably someone previously that was not electable and probably, for the most part, had not obtained a high elected office. And I guess one of the highest elected offices prior to Governor Johnson's two stints here as a Libertarian candidate was Congressman Bob Barr, who was the 2008 nominee. And Congressman Barr was a Republican congressman from Georgia. I don't know, maybe you know Bob better than I. I interviewed him a couple of times. I want to say he was three or four terms. But prior to that, you had Libertarian Party candidates that were, I think, intentionally not elected or are previously elected and, for the most part, not electable. And if the delegates have chosen someone that they believe to be electable, and what Kevin meant to, what Kevin was alluding to was former governors William Weld of Massachusetts and Governor Gary Johnson of New Mexico, if that's the price to pay in order to gain access to enough votes on a ballot, I mean, to even get your candidate on the debate stage, which I think is, we could talk about that in another segment because I think that's ridiculous. It would seem to me then, you may be right, that the culminating moment of the libertarian effort over the last 30 or 40, maybe even 50 years, is that you get Tom Woods as your keynote speaker.
Well, Tom actually delivered a speech to a closed audience of people, I guess, were some kind of donors who had donated a minimum amount. I don't know what that amount was, but the chief point he made was to respond to Governor Johnson's saying, well, you know, we are fiscal conservatives and social liberals. And Tom's answer was, we are neither fiscal conservatives nor social liberals. We just don't think the government has a role, a proper role in your life for the most part. And so Johnson ended up sounding like kind of an incoherent former Republican, and Tom sounded like, you know, Murray Rothbard, who of course is one of his heroes. So it seems to me obvious that Johnson and Weld aren't going to, you know, they're not going to be successful in winning the election, but it's unlikely that Johnson's kind of clumsy formulation of libertarian positions is going to appeal to a lot of people.
This is the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, and we're talking about the Libertarian Convention here. During our the recently concluded Libertarian Convention, during our recent our pre-show prep session, you said until recently Gary Johnson was viable or viably elected. I did not hear what it is that Governor Johnson said, but on today's Mike Church show, my friend Jordan Bloom, who is the opinion page editor of the Daily Caller, informed me pretty much of the same thing. Well, that was before Johnson actually spoke this weekend. What is it that Governor Johnson said that is so demonstrable?
Well, he just made clear that he's opposed to, he wants to put off conservatives. It seems as if Weld and Johnson both are kind of taking a position. You know, if you're a disgruntled conservative, we don't want your support. And so you're left.
What a great strategy.
When Johnson ran for president as a Republican in 2012, his constitutional position sounded pretty Jeffersonian. I actually kind of liked him. as a candidate for president. But this time around, again, it's we're fiscal conservatives and social liberals. And actually, one point of disagreement in the debate among the five libertarian candidates was that Austin Peterson, the media figure, whom I considered the most appealing of the five, said that he was pro-life, essentially. And Johnson's position on that was that he wasn't. Oh, and besides that, Johnson also said something else. He said, you know, that the besieged or beleaguered cake bakers and photographers who have come under the fire of the gay rights movement, well, tough for them. They're going to have to bake those cakes and take those pictures. I think neither a constitutional conservative nor a social conservative would be able to vote for somebody who had that position. It's of course, anti-constitutionalist and seems gratuitous. But Johnson, as I said, he apparently has decided he's going to stake out this position as a social liberal, apparently to try to appeal to people who've voted for Bernie Sanders in the primaries. And on voting day, they find Hillary Clinton's name on the ballot. Maybe they'll think, well, I can have my my state-subsidized abortion if I go for Johnson. So that's what I'll do. And, well, that seems, to my mind, that seems to be the end of it. He's as he says, he's a social conservative. And I mean, he's a social liberal and a fiscal conservative.
Well, that now, Governor Johnson's argument about the cake bakers, that's not a very libertarian or anarcho-capitalist argument. It's unlike anyone that I've ever heard, especially coming from the likes of the aforementioned Tom Woods. And I know that because I've read what Tom has written about this, so I know that Tom doesn't agree with this. I actually know, and you know, too, I spoke at an event in New York that not the year that you were there, but I believe it was a year prior to your being there, to one of these Liberty Fest events, where I was with Austin Peterson. You know, Austin Peterson used to work for Judge Napolitano. He was Judge Napolitano's talent coordinator, if you will, booker, as we called him in the biz. And so I know Austin a little bit. I've had correspondence with him since he announced his candidacy. As a matter of fact, Kurt Wallace, who I know you know, Kevin, who hosts The Flow here on the Crusade Channel, Kurt actually interviewed Austin back during the winter of this year and talked to him about his life and his work and how he wound up becoming a candidate for the presidency. And I was really surprised to hear you say that he's pro-life, because the part of the interview that Kurt did with him back in the winter that stood out to me was Austin's very loud and boisterous announcement that he was very happily an atheist and not pro-life. So I'm delighted to hear that he's had a change of heart. I wasn't aware of it, but I agree with you of the candidates that they could have chosen, especially now hearing what Governor Johnson has said during the later stages of his campaign here. It seems to me that Peterson would have been the likely choice. And I have to wonder, what kind of libertarians, did you get any kind of a vibe or a report of what kind of libertarians were actually attending this event?
Well, no, I didn't. I understand that the Libertarian Party has odd procedures for choosing delegates, but as, of course, has been highlighted in this election cycle, so do the two major parties have odd procedures for choosing delegates. So,
true.
I don't know how they ended up with the people they ended up with in the room. I'm currently looking at a statement from Austin Peterson dated September 28th, 2015. He says, although I'm pro-life, I do not think the government should be involved in legislating abortion. So
that's what it was. I might have missed.
That's his. And actually, that's a position he's taken consistently.
Yeah, that's pro-life, we could haggle over that because I heard him explain it a little more fully to Kurt, and it didn't sound very pro-life to me, but it doesn't matter now because it's been decided. No, and I'm just wondering, Professor Gutzman, you've been a student of all these political epochs that you and I have lived through over the course of the of our adult lives. We're the same age. We could both vote for Ronald Reagan in 1980. And here we are in 2016. By my count, that's 36 years later. That's, what, 9 presidential elections later. Do you ever think that there would be a electoral cycle in the United States where it is now possible that there could be not one, not two, not three, but four viable candidacies? When I say viable, meaning that they would have the kind of support necessary to get all of them on the ballot in all 50 states. And then we'll move into the suggested nomination or elevation or protestation or whatever you wish to call it of David French. What do you think?
Well, I don't think we're going to have four viable candidates. I think we're going to have two viable candidates. There may be four candidates. Actually, I understand it'd be virtually impossible to get David French on the ballot in every state, even if Bill Kristol persuades him to run and can get some foolish, you know, anti-Trump donor to donate money. and I want to correct one point. I was five and a half months too young to vote for Reagan in 1980. So I'm a spring chicken compared to you.
The old man. I'm the old. Yeah. Yeah, Sonny. I was way older than you was back then, Sonny. You will address me as Mr. Church from now on.
Sure.
But go ahead with the okay, so you don't think there's going to be four parties. Why don't we talk about the alleged fourth party? I tell you what, save that for a minute, because I want to do a little bit more with the libertarians here, with the libertarian candidates. Tell the audience, if you will, one of the more principal satisfactory results of a confirmation process in your adult life, and that would be when a certain United States senator successfully squashed the nomination of one of the potential Libertarian Party candidates for the presidency, and that's Governor William Weld of Massachusetts. Why don't you fill us in that?
No, Governor Weld is now the Libertarian vice presidential candidate.
No, I mean when he was denied an ambassadorship or something.
That's right. Well, you were saying that he was a potential presidential candidate. I'm saying no, he's actually the vice presidential candidate for Libertarians.
I meant to say potential candidate for an ambassadorship or some other position in the government. Right. This go around.
Because William Weld, who was then the Republican governor of Massachusetts, had made anti-Helms, anti-conservative statements, President Bill Clinton nominated him to be ambassador to Mexico. And apparently the fact that Weld also is, I guess, a fluent Spanish speaker seemed to qualify him for this position. And anyway, so the question was to come before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which, as it happens, was chaired by one of the senators whom Weld had attacked, and that was Jesse Helms of North Carolina. And so there was all kinds of stuff in the news about whether public pressure would force Senator Helms to allow Weld to have a hearing before the committee, despite the fact that Helms had announced that he wasn't going to have hearings into the nomination of Governor Weld for this position. And I remember at the time just being amused at the idea that Helms was going to be intimidated into having a hearing by Bill Clinton or the Washington Post or New York Times or whomever. And so time came and there was no hearing and there was no Weld ambassadorship. Very amusing outcome. I want to say too that I thought in 2012, Gary Johnson had a promising career as a Republican. That is, he was a two-term governor of New Mexico, and then he ran for president in 2012. Didn't do great, wasn't awful, and I was hopeful that he would perhaps be around for a while, but instead he decided to become the apparently an entrepreneur in the pot business, and so now he's Libertarian nominee for president. It seems just absurd. If you listen to Johnson talk about public policy in general, what you hear is not a consistent libertarian position. What you hear is simply that he, again, that he's a social liberal. So he figures that's a libertarian way to go, which is not the way anybody I know who's a libertarian thinks about being a libertarian.
Yeah, and when the campaign was over in 2012, and I'm sure you know the story, he wasn't content to not just be a Republican, because he did wind up on that stage when the debate was held that Larry King had some part in. And I can't remember the name of the outfit, but they put it on, and they had Cynthia McKinney up there from the Green Party, and Johnson was up there from the Libertarian Party. Then they had the angry old grandpa. Was he the Constitution Party, or was he the Iroquois Party? Some party from New York. You might have remembered this guy. There was a couple of viral moments from this debate. From the yelling aged candidate, gosh, I wish I could remember his name. But Johnson didn't just to take his defeat in Republican primaries and go home. Instead, you know, he just kept on campaigning and ultimately became the Libertarian Party nominee in 2012 as well. So I'm just wondering. I did have this question for you. We are on the subject. This is the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. If you enjoy what you're hearing here and you'd like to support our efforts, please become a member of the Veritas Radio Network Founders Pass membership, which will enable you to download every single nanosecond of all previous 21 episodes of this show, all previous episodes of my show, The Mike Church Show, all previous episodes of The Mark Kreslin Show, and all the other shows here on the Veritas Radio Network for as little as 23 cents per day. Go and sign up today at veritasradionetwork.com/join. And I was recalling this, that there is a lawsuit that is ongoing. I don't believe that it has been settled yet. And this outfit that bills itself as the Presidential Commission on Debates, do I have that right? Isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And Johnson is a party to this lawsuit to demand that they grant him access, or whoever he would be in the ensuing campaign years, to the presidential debate, provided that they have made the ballot in all 50 states. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at his case or look at what the constitutional issues are, but that has to be some fertile ground there, I would think.
Well, in general, the two major parties have agreed that only the two major parties will be heard. And I every 4 years we hear there's going to be a contested convention. Every 4 years we hear there's going to be a significant Libertarian Party candidacy, and neither one of these things ever happens. So the idea that Jerry Johnson will pass the 15% threshold for appearing in the presidential debates is extremely far-fetched, just as I was able to predict that there wouldn't be a contested convention. It's just obvious. It's a first past the post. You're going to have two major candidates, and you either vote for Hillary, you vote for Trump, or you sit back and watch other people choose between Hillary and Trump. That's what you get.
You know, it almost sounds like a sporting event. You either vote for Hillary, and here comes around the eighth pole, and it's Hillary with a two length lead. Here comes Trump up on the outside. There's Gary Johnson, 16 lengths back there at the 16th pole. It almost sounds like a horse race. And now, if it were a horse race, how would you grade the trifecta? That's easy, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's still probably going to be Hillary who's elected. So I've been saying that for years now.
Well, I'm going to step outside the box here on the Constitution Hour, and I'm going to predict. I'm just going all the way with this, and I already have a bet going with the editor of TheFederalist.com, David Harsanyi. I bet David that it will be a Trump landslide. It'll be 48 states to 2, and Mrs. Clinton and Bill are going to be, by the time Trump is finished with them, are going to be quivering mounds of flesh, almost incapable of even speaking or giving concession speeches. The whipping is going to be so bad. But I think it's great that we don't agree on this one because we can make bets twix now and then. And we can have a lot of fun with this. But I tell you what, why don't we come back and do our next segment here on, and perhaps we can get some historical perspective on a little bit of the political history of parties in the United States. And it's not very well known, Kevin, but you know this because you've read the book, Professor Michael F. Holtz, the what's it called? The Political Crisis of the 1850s. Yeah. Most people don't know this. At the time of the ascendancy of the Radical Republicans, as they were known in 1858 or so, there were six parties in the United States that would seek the presidency or seek seats in Congress. Some of them have very strange and far-fetched names, and if we explore what the strange and far-fetched names are, we'll find out that they're actually emblematic of who they were. So why don't we do that, and we'll talk about David French and the kingmaker, the, quote, conservative, close quote, kingmaker, William Kristol, he, the demon spawn of Irving Kristol. Did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. And we'll do all that when we come back here on the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. Remember, if you missed any of our previous episodes, you can download any or all of them at VeritasRadioNetwork.com.
The professor is in. Send your questions for Professor Kevin Gutzman to Constitution at VeritasRadioNetwork.com.